Hello and welcome to How Not to Make a Game. My guest tonight is Mark Gregory, creative director and owner of Free Sphere Entertainment. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Thank you very much for coming on.
No problems.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, wow. Okay. My name's Mark Gregory. I'm the creative director. I hate that term. At Free Sphere Entertainment, based in Warrington in the UK. We're a startup studio. I've been working in games for about 10 years, doing a mixture of media work, press work for 5-6 years, and then game development for the last 4 to 5 years as well. Mm-hmm. So that's me in a nutshell, really. For my full-time job, I work for the National Health Service here in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I do game dev on the side whilst trying to start my own studio to make my dreams a reality.
How did you get into then games development?
It all started at college. God, I'm 35 now, so this is, we're talking like 15, 20 years ago, when game dev courses were just starting up at universities. I was due to go to Stafford University to study, but then my uncle got me a well-paying job, and I ended up taking the route into IT instead. And ever since then, kind of regretted it, for being totally honest. As grateful as I am for my IT career and what it provides for me and my family, I've always regretted not going to university and following what I wanted to do. I've always been interested in games, and then about 10 years ago, I felt like I'd played enough games and had enough ideas that I wanted to start learning more about the industry and how to break into the industry and what you need to do. So I thought, rather than just jumping in cold turkey, I've always enjoyed writing and talking about games, so I'll start a blog. And so I just started a blog, and then I was approached by a couple of friends to do some reviews and do some developer interviews and things like that. So I went to events like EGX in the UK and places like that, and did sit down interviews with developers, and I do interviews like this over Skype and things like that, and podcasts, and so I did that for 4 or 5 years, learned about the industry, and learned more about game development as well from more experienced people. And then I've been working on my level design stuff, and there was an opportunity that came up to work on Solarix with Barris over at Pulse Tense. I've always been deeply into first person immersive games and the immersive sim genre. That game was probably the best thing that's ever happened to me in the games industry. Being able to work on an immersive sim for my first game with no budget wasn't probably the wisest choice that we did, but we got it through the door, and it's okay. It's rough. It's really rough in parts, but we got it through the door, and I learned so much from that process, and I wouldn't change it.
Moving on then, Free Sphere Entertainment was founded in 2016. Mm-hmm. How did you go about starting the company then?
I broke away from Barris at Pulse Tense after Devoid, and decided that I wanted to try things for myself, and kind of wanted to be the creative drive behind something, because I felt a bit stifled in parts over there, just because of constant restrictions, and you know, there's a lot bit of a language barrier there as well, him being in Turkey and me being in the UK. So I decided that I wanted to try things for myself, really. I had a concept for a game which was Tether, and I set about making documentation and began prototyping.
How big is Free Sphere now?
It's one person, essentially. It's just me. Everybody that I work with is in the same boat as me, trying to break into the industry. And working on projects together on a royalty basis, essentially. We've done a little bit of paid work in the past, which has been good, because I've been able to bring friends in from the local area and work on stuff that we've been contracted out to do, VR simulation things and a couple of other small projects, and we've done some contract work, writing and stuff like that. So everybody kind of works on themselves as a contractor, but I have a pool of people that I know and trust to get stuff done.
Oh, okay. What projects then have FreeSphere worked on apart from Tether, which we'll get into?
We built a VR simulation for a tech company in the town that I work in. We did some work with my friend Nathan before he went off to work in AAA on Doggo. We were doing narrative design and some level design with them. But then that contract had to get... we cancelled that because Nathan was fortunate enough to land a AAA job, and in AAA, most AAA studios, you have to sign a non-compete clause. So we had to can that. And then we've done some narrative work on Away Away, which is a two-person side-scroller made by my friend Tim. And we've done some narrative work on that, which hopefully should be out this winter, hopefully.
As the basically the only person working for FreeSphere, how do you go about choosing the projects that you work on? Do people come to you, or is it something that you are sort of chasing as such?
It's a mixture, really. Mm-hmm. You get word of mouth through Twitter. Twitter's everything in the game dev scene for keeping up to what people need. I run a games development meetup in Warrington as well, which has given me a lot of contacts around the town as well. So every month, every 2 months, we have a meetup with all developers from Manchester, Liverpool, Warrington. We meet up and we have speakers come and give talks. It's great because lots of local students from colleges and universities come to the event and get to mix with AAA, indie developers, and we all learn from each other, essentially, and we're all sharing techniques and sharing knowledge, essentially, which has been really beneficial.
Yeah, there's events like that over here with Games NI as well, and yeah, it's really interesting meeting the students, but meeting also then some of the bigger studio developers and things like that as well. It's really interesting seeing the contrast, and even just, you know, people getting on with each other and then starting to learn and developing all those sort of just the networking as such.
Yeah, it's great. I've been able to go into some of the local colleges. I've been doing some work with Matt Wilson over at Priestley College in Warrington. And I go in there once a month, maybe, and give a level design talk or a narrative talk to the students. And then I walk around and see what it is they're building, play it. And if they want my feedback, I'll give it to them. It's something that we've done for a while now. I've done that for the last 2.5 years. It's really beneficial. I always feel good leaving there. You know, it gives you a good buzz.
What about funding then for the company? As you've said, you have a full-time job as well.
Yeah.
Does the work that you do with other companies fund FreeSphere as it is, or are you still using some of the extra money that you're using from your full-time job?
Both. So previous work, so OAOA isn't out yet. We're hoping that'll be a nice little cash windfall if that does well. We'll see what happens with that. That was more to help a friend out to make sure his project could get completed. Money's not everything to me at the moment because I'm in a fortunate position where my day job more than sustains me and my wife. So, yeah, that's all. Yeah. I don't really know what else to say to that, really. Money's not too much of a concern, fortunately. You know, I haven't really ever tried to break into the dev scene just yet because it's difficult when you get used to a lifestyle and knowing that if you were to go into a studio, you'd have to work your way up, which would mean taking a drastic wage cut. And when I've got an 8-month-old daughter at home and a wife and a mortgage and cars on the drive that need paying for every month, the realities of just quitting my job, which is what some friends have said, just quit. It's like, I can't just quit. I can't just leave a job that I'm earning X amount at to go and take a job that pays significantly less, you know. So it puts you in a real conundrum between wanting to have some form of job satisfaction and then to be sustainable. So,
yeah, absolutely. Moving on then to Tether, which is probably your best known project. Tell me how Tether started up as a project, and did it come before FreeSphere, Or was it something that you had in the back of your head for working on?
It was something I had in the back of my head for working on. And the reason why I started FreeSphere, I love the horror genre. And I'd always been interested in a parent. You know, parents that work away a lot on what that does to the kids. And it's always been a question that's like, I was fortunate that my parents both stayed at home, but I've always wondered about these kids with parents that work away 4 or 5 days a week and then stay overnight, you know, do a lot of traveling with their jobs and they're away for long periods of time. So what does that do to the children and what does that do to the parents? Like, or what sort of guilt do they feel around that? And that was the initial concept for Tether, and plus my love of science fiction and playing something like Soma that was just so full of like existential dread, and I wanted to try and merge those that narrative and horror together, which is what I wanted to try to achieve.
You took Tether through the green light process on Steam, which is obviously now defunct.
Yeah.
How did you, or what was your experience of that sort of method of sort of generating interest for the game?
To be honest, I was pretty much a novice there. I had myself, my friend Nathan at the time, a sound designer, Callum, and a couple of other guys and girls that we were working with from all over the world. And we'd been cranking away at it for about 6 months, and we decided it was time to push the button. We thought the best way to do that would be with a trailer and to get onto Greenlight. So we threw together a trailer with what environments that we had, and asked Tamara Ryan to do, who was playing Leslie, to do some voiceover for it, and that was the way that we decided to generate some interest in the project.
How much outside interest in the project was there because of Greenlight?
Quite a lot to begin with. I mean, it's weird. Even now, I still get emails asking how the project's progressing, and then from other people that don't know that the project's canned well on the shelf at the moment. And it's still nice to see that people read those articles that are on PC Gamer, Rock Paper Shotgun, PC Games, and places like that, and read about it, and they're still interested in it.
The vertical slice then was made by, do you say, 7 devs from around the world in 6 months?
Yes, 7. Yeah.
I'm sure that was a sort of fairly intensive process to get it, because obviously if you're going to use that vertical slice for a demo or even for pitching and things, I'm sure that was a pretty intense period of time.
Yeah, definitely. That was a lot of long nights. Fortunately, my wife is super supportive and supports me in anything that I want to do that makes me happy. And that meant a lot of nights of being awake till 2, 3, and then getting up for work at 7, you know, and burning the candle at both ends to make that happen. But it wasn't just myself; it was myself and the guys and girls that I was in the trenches with at the time, trying to follow a dream. Really,
How do you go about project managing something like that in such a short time span?
A lot of prefabricated assets, really. We tried to build the environments with marketplace content. We did. You can only go so far with that, and it starts to really limit you in terms of like what you want to do from a creative side of things and how you want to set things up. And a lot of cinematography and framing gets neglected because of that, because you are so limited with these rigid assets that you're unable to alter, essentially. So, yeah. That's where we got to with it.
What game engine was it made in?
It was in Unreal 4. We made the game in.
Was there any other options then within the game engine around that time?
How do you mean? Sorry.
As in any other options for different things? I know with Unity and things now.
Oh right, not really, because Blueprints was we wanted to make the game entirely in Blueprints because we didn't have a programmer. We had a games designer, Nathan, who was very proficient at Blueprints, and Nathan was able to build all the systems that we needed within Blueprints, and then I was able to craft the levels and start distributing assets, and then Nathan would help with that, and Callum would come in and do the sound, and Rachel would do the 2D artwork, and yeah, that's kind of how we worked with it.
So in the timeline then, with the vertical slice, was that before or after Greenlight?
That was after, just shortly afterwards, because the plan was to try and make as big a splash as we could with Greenlight and our launch trailer, well, not launch trailer, sorry, reveal trailer, and then try to use that bit of hype, call it hype, that interest in the project, and try and take it to a publisher essentially, and see if we could secure the funding that we needed to work full time on it for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Was that then the next step, trying to get a publisher and going to pitching events?
Yeah, it was, which was completely the wrong step, to be honest. So I've previously learned that a lot of publishers with first-time studios won't want to take that risk until the project is very, very close to being completed. Because obviously if you're saying, hey, I need like 18 months to 2 years worth of dev time, and we've hardly even started on the full game yet, we've just built this vertical slice, it's like, okay, that's like a big risk for somebody who wants to put a large chunk of money into a first-time studio. You know, even though we had people that had made games before previously, it doesn't give them any faith that you're able to complete upon that. And I completely understand that now. At the time, I didn't. I thought the concept was that strong, and what we'd built would be strong enough to persuade them, essentially.
How many different opportunities for pitching it did you have?
We did two different pitching events. We did one at EGX, and we did another one. I think Ian did one in America. Ian went and did one. I wasn't present for that. So,
were they sort of different in tone, or the people that were there looking for different things at the time?
It was weird. I've never been to a pitching event before. I had no idea what to expect. All I knew is I had a prototype and I wanted to show it to people and try. I had no idea what I was doing or what to expect. I was going into it completely blind. I just tried to go as well prepared as I could with business cards, printed out presentations, the build, and myself. So, yeah.
Did you have an idea about budgets and things whenever you were going into the pitching event?
Yeah, we put together like a budget sheet and a pitch packet that we went with.
What about feedback then from the pitching events?
Very, very little, to be honest. A lot of them say, yeah, we'll be in touch with feedback, and as you can gather, like, very few do. The good ones do, like Callum from I forgot who Callum works for now, DevRev Callum on Twitter, everybody knows Callum. He was super helpful and actually took the time to give us lots of feedback, like lots of written feedback that was usable to understand where we went wrong and how we could improve things in the future.
In one of the little articles that I'd seen on Tether, particularly about it being put on hold, it was mentioned that at that stage you probably should have considered a redesign of the project, or at least had a different sort of potential vertical slice or whatever to show. What changes would you have made?
I wouldn't have made a vertical slice. I'd have started making the game and said, this is what we've got so far. I wouldn't have bothered with the vertical slice as a first-time developer. If I was an established studio, yeah, sure, I'd take a vertical slice. An established studio that I got one previous game that's got some accolades underneath it, you could probably take and get what you want. But when you're a first-time studio and you're taking a vertical slice, you might as well just take the first half an hour of your game and make that playable, because we made the mistake that we took. We started the game about 4 hours in and then tried to have people understand who these characters are, what the situations it is she's in. And then there was no mystery or intrigue in it. It was a bit flat. it suffered a lot for that, essentially, because there was no mystery and no intrigue or no build-up, especially in such a narratively driven game as Tether. We just weren't able to build any mystery by starting it at the point that we did.
How hard then was the decision to put the project on hold?
At that time, it was pretty simple, to be honest. At that point, we'd done 2 years as a team. Multiple burnouts from myself personally, and then from colleagues that weren't just colleagues, they were friends. They'd come to my wedding, you know, they'd come on my stag do. They were family, I said, and they are still family. You know, I still talk to most of them on a weekly basis. I can't speak highly enough of all of them. I love all of them dearly, and that they are friends for life. I couldn't keep doing it to them. I was in a pretty rough place personally as well. My wife had just miscarried, so I needed to give my wife some attention. She'd supported me through everything, and I felt I needed to do the same, and it felt that was the right time to just say, let's just put this on ice for a bit.
Moving forward then, what is the future of FreeSphere?
Well, we have a new smaller scope project in the works at the moment with a completely different team that we've been working on for about a month now. It's still in very, very early stages. But I'm taking all the lessons that I've learned from Tether and other projects and talking to friends and we're just able to build things a lot quicker now. This team's a little bit more experienced as well, although we've got something ridiculous like 70 years experience in the team from the six team members.
Wow.
Everybody's self-sufficient, everybody's working in a job already, and everybody's working on it as kind of like a passion project. So the pace is a bit slower, which is good for me with an infant at home, and doesn't demand too much of my time. It allows me to be more technical in engine and get my technical skills back to where I need and want them to be, because I'm happiest when I'm in engine building levels and I'm working with narrative. So it allows me to be more hands-on and not to be a producer. At the moment, everything's moving forward and going well on the new project.
Very good. Three quick questions then, just to finish off. Apart from Tether, how many other games are in your unfinished folder? And is there one of them that you would most like to finish?
Tether, this new project, and The Life of Max. That's in my unfinished folder projects, and that's the one that I'm desperate to get out there. It's a game about bullying. It's kind of like a childhood memoir. Just the shit that I went through. Oh, I'm sorry, can I swear? Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'll be better.
Sorry. The stuff that I went through in school and talking with friends as well and their experiences of bullying and reading a lot of testimonies online about bullying. And then it's just more of a case of how kids can deal with bullying in a different way. I had no idea how to deal with it when I was a kid. And I just, if I could get that out there, I think make a difference, but it could, if I can just give one kid the tools to understand how to defuse a situation, then I'd be happy, you know?
Yeah, it's a very different situation now in schools as well, with a lot of social media and smartphones, etc. And yeah, it's...
Oh, from when I was growing up to now, it must be hell for kids. Yeah. Constantly connected. Get a ping in the middle of the night and you're checking your phone and that's you awake then. And I can't even imagine what this mental torture for kids these days if they're going through it. It must be.
Yep.
There is no escape. At least when I was a kid, I could just shut my bedroom door and just be away from it. Do you know? Yeah.
Yeah. What's the one thing you wish all company owners knew?
To employ a multicultural team. I've been lucky enough to work with people all around the world, from all different sexual orientations, all different races. It's it's made me a more aware and I don't know if it's the right terminology, but a fuller person. Like, mm-hmm. I'm acutely more aware of a lot more of what's going on than what I used to be. So I would definitely implore people to do that, especially in the Northwest, where it is a lot of young white men.
Mm.
If you can, do it, you know.
Just as a slight aside then, to your answer there, what about remote working? How did you find using remote working whenever you were working on different projects?
Absolutely love it. Love it. It's the best thing ever for us. Like, we have a Perforce server, and everybody pulls into the depot, and it's great to wake up in the morning and then see what VJ has been working on in India, or what Hosin's been working on. And it's just great to wake up, open up Perforce, and see that they've checked something in overnight, and then excitedly open the engine every morning because they've been awake 3 or 4 hours longer than what we have, you know. So,
yeah.
And then again, if Pete or John have been working in the States, again, you wake up and you see more work. It's great. And then you know for the rest of the day, like, you're excited while you're at work. Like, I get giddy while I'm at work because I can't wait to get home and get the baby to bed to start working on the next thing for them to carry it on the next night. You know, it's good for camaraderie, definitely. It works really well for us, the 24-hour dev cycle. It works wonders for us.
Last of my quick questions, who or what inspires you?
Now that my daughter's here, my daughter's my main inspiration. I know it sounds cliche, but until you become a parent, like, I am desperate for my daughter not to see her dad miserable because of the job that he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am determined that she is not going to see that. And I've needed that determination for a while. Like, I don't want her to associate work with negative thoughts and negative emotions. I want her to enjoy work when she's older, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like Thomas Gripp from Fictional Games, Adrian Himmelesh from The Astronauts. They're just two developers that inspire me. Pete Bottomley at White Paper in Manchester. Peter Field, ex-Naughty Dog, now at Media Molecule. Pete's become a friend. There's too many people that that I've grown to know and respect, and people who just inspire me constantly to keep pushing boundaries.
Mm. Well, thank you very much, Mark. That's that's been really, really interesting. As I always do on these episodes, I'll pass it over to you now to give shout-outs to any projects or any people that any listeners and what have you should go and look up and start following and things on different social media or whatever. So take it away.
Oh, God. Okay. okay, so my Twitter handle is at @MarkGregory_. Mm-hmm. The studio's is @FreeSphere_. We're on Instagram as well with the same address. There'll be more coming from us in the coming weeks and months as we start showing off more of the new project.
Mm-hmm.
Our website's www.freesphere.uk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, freesphere.uk. And that's it. Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. You can get in contact with the show at @HowToMakeAGame, the number 2 on it, on Twitter. I'm Saintly Stewart on Twitter as well. And you can email us on howtomakeagamecast@gmail.com. We are on Spotify and Anchor.fm and Podbean and most other podcast places as well. Now, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, Mark.
No problems. Thank you for having me again.
That's okay. And goodbye.
Bye.